The war machine or support sanity. We'll see what comes next in the story of the descent of Keir Starmer and his kindercidal government. We'll see who's willing to shout with pride. I support Palestine action. I oppose genocide. I support Palestine action. I oppose genocide. I support Palestine action. I oppose genocide.
Yesterday, the Alliance of 30-odd countries is meeting to formulate what concrete actions it can take to curb Israel's genocide of Palestinians. This initiative follows the utter failure of the United Nations and its concomitant judicial appendages to bring an end to the slaughter of civilians seen daily for the past 21 months and more. America and its NATO claque are predictably hostile, with the U.S. promising terrible retribution to come for Hague Group members. Dan Kovalik is a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author and filmmaker. Dan represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's far-right death squads and has been to the country to witness both elections and the transformative, if still fragile, peace process that has emerged there in the last few years. His book titles include Cancel This Book, The Progressive Case Against Cancel Culture, No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interests, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care, and The Plot to Attack Iran, How the CIA and the Deep State Have Conspired to Vilify Iran. Welcome back to the program, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always my pleasure. Of course, now, Dan, the Trump administration's bellicosity towards the Hague Group surprised even me. Its release sounded to be begging some kind of attack against the meetings. What's the state of relations between Israel and their former friends amongst Colombia's oligarchs?
Yes, well, Israel's still very close to the, you know, oligarchs that they've partnered with for years. Israel helped train the paramilitaries that have haunted Colombia for many years. But Gustavo Petro, the president, former guerrilla and president, is, you know, he's trying to break those chains with Israel, and he has broken relations with Israel. And he, along with South Africa, are hosting this Hague Group meeting in Bogota, Colombia, to try to address the terrible situation facing the Palestinians in Gaza.
And the name, of course, is a pointed stick in the eye of the actual courts of The Hague, whose job it is to, if they did their jobs, there would be no need for a Hague Group.
Well, that is correct. And one of the big goals of the group is to make sure the international law is enforced when it comes to Israel.
And so now, off air, you were telling me that there's breaking news. This is something I haven't heard, that the Hague Group has come to a point of agreement on a plan, on their so-called concrete actions. What is the plan here?
Yeah, so there's a six-point plan that they just announced. And I'll just read it to you very quickly. It's very brief. Okay, so number one, prevent the provision or transfer of arms, munitions, military fuel, related military equipment, and dual-use items to Israel. Two, prevent the transit, docketing, and servicing of vessels at any point in all cases where there's a clear risk of the vessel being used to carry such arms, etc., to Israel. Three, prevent the carriage of arms, munitions, military fuel, related military equipment, and dual-use items to Israel on vessels bearing our flag. Four, commence an urgent review of all public contracts to prevent public institutions and funds from supporting Israel's illegal occupation of the Palestinian territory. Five, comply with obligations to ensure accountability for the most serious crimes under international law. Six, support universal jurisdiction mandates and where applicable, in national legal frameworks and judiciaries to ensure justice for victims of international crimes committed in the occupied Palestinian territory. Those are the six-point plan agreed to by the Hague Group.
Do you think it goes far enough? Or, well, clearly it's not. None of these things by themselves or even collectively are going to slow Israel one iota, I don't expect. But was there something more that could be said? Could there be some seventh points here?
Yes, and I would cite my friend Sam Husseini, who's a Palestinian-American, who's been pushing very hard, and he put out a statement before the Hague Group meeting trying to push for stronger measures. And what he's been pushing for is that the United Nations General Assembly activate what is called the Uniting for Peace program, which allows essentially the General Assembly to do an end around the Security Council, which, as you know, has been completely ineffectual over Israel because the U.S. vetoes any resolution that would try to hold Israel accountable for their crimes or stop their crimes. So the General Assembly can unite for peace and say, okay, well, we're going to order measures that would protect the Palestinian people, and that could include even military intervention, you know, where you would send in UN troops to protect the Palestinian people. And that is something which I believe and others believe is long overdue, that if there's any moment in history that was necessary, I would say that's necessary now. So these states could have called for that and could have said, okay, we're going to go back to the General Assembly of the United Nations and we're going to put in, you know, we're going to propose a Uniting for Peace resolution on this. They didn't do that, right? So they I would say maybe pulled a punch there.
Well, Sam says, and I'll quote him, he says, we don't need more talk pretending to be action. The Hague Group should move to using United for Peace, get aid into Gaza as was done with the Berlin airlift, get a peace force in as it was done during Suez Crisis, get serious sanctions on Israel as was done with South Africa. Yeah, all these things seem pretty self-evident to me, at least. Why do you think, Dan, that the Hague Group didn't do just that?
I don't know. I can't answer that. I am baffled why I haven't seen any state party out of the 191 states that are members of the United Nations. As far as I know, not one state party has tried to move for that type of resolution.
Save Yemen. I mean, well, what, they're not moving for resolution. They're just doing it.
They're acting. So I'm a little baffled, I'll be honest, why that hasn't happened. The other thing I'm baffled about, and again, that isn't in the six-point plan, why aren't states, especially big states, but they wouldn't even have to be big, why aren't these Hague Group states not sending flotillas to Gaza with humanitarian aid, right? I mean, Israel's not going to attack, I don't think, a flotilla of multiple states who are trying to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza. And by the way, if they did, it would then provoke maybe military response to Israel, which, again, is necessary. So I don't know why that hasn't been done, and I don't know why that isn't also part of this plan. So it's good what they've said, but it's not enough. I mean, it's not enough.
Well, they say, this summit marks a turning point in the global response to the erosion and violation of international law. That comes from South African Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Ronald Lamola. He says, no country is above the law and no crime will go unanswered. Well, clearly that's not true, though, at least not as we've seen it, at least since the end of the Second War, where the United States and its acolyte, Israel, whatever, you know, there's people have different views on that relationship. But they both act with utter impunity, and they have committed strings of crimes, many of which you and I have talked about over the years.
Yes, and so how are they? How are these states going to guarantee that Israel is held accountable? I just don't know. I mean, now this is their first. I believe this is their first. I know they've met before, but I think informally, and I think they did meet in The Hague. I think this is their first formal meeting to discuss what they're going to do. So, look, these things could be fleshed out. Mm-hmm. Things could be added. But I'll be honest, I don't see this as the turning point that it was promised to be. I don't want to say it's more of the same. I think it's something. But it's not enough. It's not enough given the fact that, look, we're near the end game, which is a terrible thing to say, but people are starving now in Gaza, right? There's no food. There's no water, and there hasn't been for months. And to the extent that aid's being brought in, now, as you know, every day the aid workers themselves are shooting at the people trying to get the aid. I mean, this is crazy. So it's not like we have a lot of time to be talking about this. The truth is, this type of plan is the type of plan that should have been announced a long time ago, right? We're way past this now in terms of what we need, I think.
Well, it seems to me it's more an attack on the UN and the ICC for their failure to act. There's nothing they could say that's going to affect Israel, in my view, at least. And when you mention, like, yeah, the so-called aid bringers with the "we're here to help" clan that are heavily armed and mercenaries and made up of American and foreign mercenaries and so forth, that the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, begging irony at every syllable, that opened fire with grenades and so forth and live ammunition on people that are starving. The CBC, our national broadcaster up here in Canada, today on the news had a report about just such another massacre that seemed to be daily now anyway, that happened earlier today in Gaza time. But they quote the representatives of the GHF as if anything they have to say, as well as representatives of Israel, that what they have to say has any credibility whatsoever, or that all of these massacres haven't been a systemic part of the so-called aid delivery from the start. So, I mean, I guess it is some movement to see some countries going some direction. Canada, of course, didn't take part in this Hague group, and I'm not sure what the statements this government made about it, but the American statements from the American government have been pretty damning. Do you want to talk about the Trump's administration over-the-top reaction to even the mounting of this Hague group meeting?
Yeah, well, he's threatened the member states of the Hague group, I believe unspecified reprisals for even meeting to discuss this. They've already sanctioned Francesca Albanese, the UN rapporteur, who was at the Hague group meeting. She was delivered an address to them. They've already sanctioned her. So now it's been for some time. It's seen as really a crime by the United States and some of its allies like the United Kingdom and Germany and some others to speak out about Palestine. I have many friends and the United Kingdom, for example, who have been arrested or been threatened with arrest for speaking out against Palestine, for example, on Twitter. Of course, we've seen here in the United States folks who have been here legally on visas arrested, threatened with deportation, some actually deported. Again, because of their positions on Palestine or the resistance. All this, really flies in the face of the claim of the West that they support freedom of speech and human rights. It's really incredible.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dan Kovalik. Dan's a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. He represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's erstwhile far-right death squads. He's been there many times, and we are talking about the meetings in and around the Hague group meetings that are taking place in Bogota. I think closing today, was that six-point plan you announced, is that the end of the meetings? Everybody's going home now, Dan?
Well, I believe so. Now, it should be said there are civil society groups from around the world in Bogota who are going to, I believe, have a march today. It may be even happening now in support of the Hague group. They're actually forming a group called Friends of the Hague group. And they'll continue to meet. And also, I think they will probably put out a statement, again, if they haven't already, which will probably support what the Hague group is planning, but probably also urge the Hague group to take even more drastic action. That's my guess. So, but I think the member states who are there are, yes, probably on their way home at this point.
Well, Albanese, Francesca Albanese, the famous rapporteur, UN rapporteur, she says, quote, enough impunity, enough empty rhetoric, enough exceptionalism, enough complicity. The time has come to act in pursuit of justice and peace grounded in rights and freedoms for all and not mere privileges for some at the expense of the annihilation of others. That annihilation part is something that you mentioned, that we're now there. Israelis are herding people not only in Gaza into concentration camps after killing untold numbers, 500,000 at some estimates. But they're also caging people in the West Bank behind, like, whole villages behind razor wire. And there's been pogroms daily going on there that are hardly reported in the Western presses or anywhere else, really. They're getting very little coverage. But some of the worst examples of racist hatred that we've seen since the famous German pogroms that must remain unmentioned in relation to Israel, I suppose. Again, it comes around to the right of Palestinians and other nations to intervene militarily.
Of course. I mean, again, I think states aren't only allowed to, but I think they're obligated to intervene, given the fact that there's an active genocide taking place. The Genocide Convention in 1948, which is the first human rights convention that was agreed to after the founding of the United Nations, requires states to act to stop and prevent genocide. And so in Yemen, again, as you mentioned, they have compelling them to do what they're doing, and that is to stop certain shipping in the Red Sea to try to interfere with Israel's ability to carry out the genocide. And that's been somewhat successful. I saw this morning that a big Israeli port, the port of Eilat, I believe it's called, is now permanently closed because of what Yemen has done. And that will make it harder for Israel to carry out the genocide. So kudos to the Yemenis. But no one else is doing what the Yemenis are doing.
Well, there was always the responsibility to protect doctrine that in Canada is often recited, because it was a Canadian minister back in the day, Lloyd Axworthy, that tabled it at the United Nations. That R2P, as it's referred, has been used as an excuse for humanitarian interventions, as you mentioned in the title of one of your books. But now when it counts, when it's needed most, when it could actually prove itself to be more than just a cynical excuse for regime change in foreign countries, not a peep.
Well, it's absolutely true. And as you said, I have a book, and I've been for years very critical of humanitarian interventionism, because it's basically been a fig leaf for regime change operations, for aggressive war, It's been horribly misused, but I would say that in this case, I would unequivocally support a true humanitarian intervention to protect the Palestinian people. I think that that would be totally legitimate. But as you say, I mean, it really proves the lie of Western humanitarian interventionism, because if they really cared about human rights and were willing to truly intervene to protect human rights, they would be rushing in to protect the Palestinians. Instead, as we know, a number of Western states, quite to the contrary, are sending weapons and munitions to Israel to actually carry out the genocide. So, yeah, it's quite shameful. But I would certainly, in this case, support a humanitarian intervention.
Well, and about nations that are supporting and nations that aren't, because of your long history with Colombia and following this change of power that I mentioned off the top from the 50-some-odd year civil war that was going on and the death squads and everything else. I mean, really some of the worst atrocities in the whole world were going on in Colombia just for forever. Colombia now, I was knocked off my seat when I first heard that Gustavo Petro had cut diplomatic ties with Israel last year, you know, citing the genocide. Especially because of the close ties that those two countries have had over many years, with Israel supporting those same death squads and arming them and training them and all the rest. Well, what if his Petro's victory was very narrow, and so there's a very strong element of those same death squad far rightists that are still an important political players, not to mention the oligarch class as well. Can you give us a thumbnail, Dan, of the situation in Colombia politically right now and how Petro's move has been received there?
Well, again, I think it depends on who you ask. I think the oligarchs are very upset about what he's doing in terms of supporting Palestine and cutting ties with Israel. But I think it's very popular amongst most of the voters, amongst most of the Colombia's working class and poor people, which is pretty much the vast majority of the people. I think that this is very popular, and I think actually from a political point of view, it was a very smart thing to do, although a dangerous thing, because I do think there will be huge backlash from the oligarchs and from the military, which has always had its own, you know, its own logic and its own, you know, it's a force of its own within that country, not always completely controlled by the president. So he certainly puts himself in danger by doing this.
Yeah, well, the foreign minister, the Colombian foreign minister, he opened up the Hague group meetings there, saying, quote, "Colombia has positioned itself without ambiguity. What is happening in Gaza is a genocide. That's why this meeting seeks to go beyond declarations. We seek to support investigations of the International Criminal Court, investigations by the International Criminal Court, demand a commitment by the International Court of Justice to propose specific sanctions and mobilize every instrument that international law allows." I thought that was already underway, Dan. I thought the ICC and the ICJ had already damned Israel, and they had, declared what they're doing illegal. And received, you know, of course, there's sanctions against the ICC and its lead prosecutor going on, as well as against Francesca Albanese. But what more can those two bodies do without the UN itself moving, without an enforcement mechanism in the UN? Do they have any utility at all?
Well, you're right. I mean, on their own, they can't do anything else beyond what they've done so far, which is, to issue warrants against Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Gallant. Now, they could issue some more arrest warrants, of course, but in the end, it's going to be up to member states to enforce those warrants by arresting Netanyahu and Gallant. And, of course, just as we saw recently, Netanyahu flew over all of Western Europe successfully, uninhibited, to the U.S. to meet with Trump. And he was never, you know, threatened with arrest, much less arrested. So these states, I think they're certainly saying that if Netanyahu or Gallant were to try to fly over their airspace, you know, a member of the Hague Group or land in their countries, they would arrest him. So, you know, so that's something. But you're right. Look, it's up to the member states to assist the ICC in prosecuting people. And there's too many states in the world that just won't do that. You know, if Netanyahu can safely fly over all of Europe and the Atlantic to the United States without being bothered, I think he's pretty happy.
Yeah. Well, the Palestinian ambassador and permanent observer of Palestine to the UN, which is his official title because they can't be recognized really fully, Raad Mansour, he was there. He addressed the Hague Group convention, and he says, quote, "The core values we believed humanity agreed were universal are shattered, blown to pieces, like the tens of thousands of starved, murdered, and injured civilians in Palestine. Accountability alone is not enough for justice to prevail." I wonder, Dan, in our final moments here, if this isn't really the greater danger. I don't want to diminish what's going on in Palestine by any means, but that what's happening there is a pushing open of the Overton window, the boiling of the frog, so to speak, of international jurisprudence that is allowing the kind of things we're seeing Israel commit in Palestine or the United States commit in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places, is this is just another mechanism to inure the rest of the world to this kind of daily horrors that this genocide entails for a future conflagration of much greater scope and size.
Yes, well, I do think that. I do think that what you're seeing in Gaza is a laboratory. It's a testing ground for many things, for weapons, for concentration camps, organizing people in these concentration camps, for ethnic cleansing, for genocide, but yes, also for the eradication of any moral or legal bounds against populations. And I think, you know, again, when you look now at the United States and the, you know, real repression that's happening here and the real mistreatment of people by ICE, that just got this huge budget increase. It'll be the most heavily funded federal agency in U.S. history. And the U.S. just built this so-called alligator Alcatraz, this giant, again, concentration camp to house immigrants. I think you're seeing the result of this laboratory in Gaza. I think you're right. They are trying to show the world there are no limits to what states can do to not only people in Palestine, but anywhere, including their own people. And it's a quite scary thing, and people need to be aware that this is happening.
Well, Americans and Canadians, too, should remember, despite accepting the First Nations, we're all immigrants. And I have a feeling we're all going to be eligible for these prisons and maybe those offshore ones, too. Dan, there's a lot more to talk about. I didn't get to Palestine Action in Britain, as you were talking a little bit about there, but another time. Thanks a lot for coming on and for all the work you do, eh, Dan?
Thank you, Chris. Always appreciate it.
And I want everyone else to go check out Eve's run for the NDP leadership. Go to eve4ndpleader.ca or eveangler.com to get more information about that and take part and shake things up. At least we can go down fighting. Thanks a lot, Dan.
You're very welcome.
That's all I got for this time. Until the next.
Will we pack the prisons or will we disappear. Have a Spartacus moment or a time of fear. Back down and go home, or stand with humanity. Support the war machine or support sanity. We'll see what comes next in the story of the descent of Keir Starmer and his kindercidal government. We'll see who's willing to shout with pride. I support Palestine action. I oppose genocide. I support Palestine action. I oppose genocide. I support Palestine action. I oppose genocide.